Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of LRN's Principled Podcast. My name is Ben DiPietro. I'm the editor of LRN's ENC Pulse newsletter. Would appreciate if you can find that and subscribe. We're lucky to have with us today Cindy Mooring, the founder and executive chair of the Business Integrity Leadership Initiative at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. Hello, Cindy. Appreciate your time today. Thanks.
Hey, Ben. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So you've switched over. You were previously at Walmart, and you went to the university to create this program.
I did.
What are you doing in your role? When did you start? And why did you feel it was important to leave the corporate world to undertake this mission?
I am super excited about this new venture. I've thought about it for a long time, but was really busy in my job at Walmart and wasn't able to kind of bring it to fruition until I was at a point where I could retire after 20 years there and then take it more upstream. So what we're doing is the Dean's Strategic Initiative to create this new business integrity leadership program, really, for the Sam M. Walton College of Business. And what we're doing is building an overall program so that the business school itself will be seen as an influential leader in business ethics for all of its stakeholders. We're going to do that so that it's a very integrated, practical, an experiential approach, something that I think is missing oftentimes in business schools, the practical and the experiential, and making it integrated sort of across the business school curriculum. And we're going to be engaging the business community in that effort as well. So super excited about that and the ability to really take business ethics from being seen, I think, in many students' eyes as, oh yeah, that's that optional class that, well, maybe I have to take if I'm going to major in management or get an HR degree, and integrating it instead across the business school curriculum so that it is actually a topic that is discussed in, for example, their marketing class or their logistics class or their accounting class when the issues arise, because that's the way that students are going to start to connect the dots to how life is going to actually work when they get out into business and recognize that regardless of what they majored in, these business ethics issues are actually going to pop up in whatever discipline they choose.
How is this going? Are you getting good feedback? Are you already integrating into the courses, or is that something to come yet?
So I'm just getting started, really got underway just, gosh, maybe, you know, a few months ago. We had some early beginnings kind of behind the scenes work at the end of the year last year, but then publicly kind of announced it to everyone internally and externally just at the beginning of this semester. So it's still the early days. It is incredibly supported. Everyone that we talked to couldn't agree more on the need for this. We just seem to be at a time where, for lack of a better word, I'd say society has in many ways normalized unethical behavior. And for future business leaders, that's not good. They're not going to have an anchor or a true north on what just basic business ethics principles are that shouldn't be normalized. So a lot of excitement, a lot of energy around it, plans already being made to have it integrated with the fall semester. Obviously, you know, spring semester is underway. You got to allow enough time, as in anything, for the planning phase. So we are deep into the planning phase on many different kind of facets of the overall program.
As you develop these people and they come out into the world, some will probably enter the ethics and compliance field. What role do you see for the ethics and compliance professional in a world where technological changes are driving these significant disruptions to organizations and workplaces? How will the ENC professional have to change the way they perceive and perform their duties? And how will those duties themselves change?
I predict that some will come out and go into the ENC profession. But I also predict that the vast majority of them will end up being business operators and business leaders. And so I would actually answer your question almost in a little bit of a different way and at a broader level than, and I'll come back to it, but at a broader level first than just the E&C profession. I think in this world that we're going into where technology is making everything more transparent, I think you're going to see a greater blend of responsibilities between the ethics compliance professionals and what those of us in the profession typically call the frontline operators. I think more of the frontline operators will have to understand that ethics and compliance and leading on those issues is core to who they are and how they need to lead. And so technology, I think, is going to bring that to life for them so that they can see, oh, you know, when they're sort of looking at how they're doing on a particular compliance area for, say, on a dashboard, they'll be able to say, oh, now I get it. And I'm the one who's the frontline manager who's now has to go talk to my team about how we missed it on this particular, you know, issue of compliance so that we can change it. And I think it'll develop that muscle in them more, the transparency will, and it will become seen less as an ethics and compliance professional, I would say, actually owning and running the program, which is, of course, it has to be designed by the E&C professionals, but it really has got to be built into the business operations and then in large part owned by the frontline operators. And I think what you'll see then is ethics and compliance professionals becoming even closer business partners with those frontline operators, almost working from, I would say, an exception perspective in looking at what the dashboards and data is going to be able to tell them about what's going on with their programs, less so than trying to find the needle in the haystack. It's the technology and the artificial intelligence. And as it gets smarter, the machine learning will be able to immediately point to where the exceptions are. And then in many cases, they will be seeing that they, the E&C professionals, at the same time the frontline operators are, in a world where you have enterprise risk management systems where everyone can see the information at the same time. And the beauty of that is we could then end up in a situation where some behaviors, some illegal even, potential business deals can be stopped and remediated before they actually occur.
You recently wrote an article in Diligent Insight about some ways boards can reduce the amount of chief executive turnover tied to ethical lapses. These ethical lapses reached a record number in 2019 for CEOs resigning because of them. What are some things boards can do to make this a little bit less of a problem?
It's interesting. It's difficult to say really whether that's just worse behavior or the fact that the world is just more transparent and boards and stakeholders in general are less tolerant. And if I had to guess, I'd say it's probably the latter as opposed to the former. But I don't think that any board today can afford to get caught flat-footed on any of that, because in the time it takes to send a tweet around the world, they could find themselves in a reactive situation instead of a proactive situation. And so what I think that boards should be doing is really setting the tone above the CEO level and making sure that they have certain touch points where leaders in the company below just the C-suite see them just from time to time around or interacting in different company forums, and where they will have an opportunity to just say a few words about their role in maintaining the company culture and their role in kind of overseeing the ethics and compliance program if they're an audit committee member, and how important that is to them. Those just little properly placed, you know, seeds of information have transformative effects in the company and really lets everyone know that the board's paying attention and basically everyone's held to the same standard, including the CEO, should you have a problem with your CEO. So that's one. I think then another really important piece is for board members to form a more personal relationship with their CECOs and to make sure that they're meeting with them regularly in private session so that they can have those very unvarnished, candid, transparent conversations about some issues that may just need to be discussed privately and not in a room full of senior executives if you're, for example, sitting in an audit committee meeting. So I think those two things are really important. The other last point I would say on that that's important is for audit committees or whatever committee, it might be a compliance committee that's overseeing ethics and compliance, for them to be very clear on the types of allegations that must be reported to the audit committee, and then to make time on their agendas so that it isn't just the metrics that they're hearing about for the program generally and on the ones that they want reported directly to the audit committee, but that they actually have time to discuss those more serious allegations and how they, you know, turned out and whether they were substantiated or not. And then most importantly, whether or not the program is being administered in a way that is consistent, so that regardless of a person's level in the organization, if the allegation that was substantiated is similar, then people need to be treated in the same situation. And there are certain times when I think having a board weigh in on that can be very helpful to a CECO, if necessary, if they're not getting the support they need in the company.
You recently took part in a forum we held here at LRN on why, if ENC people are such good candidates for board seats because of their experience with risk, culture, and understanding the value of strong ENC programs, but so few actually serve on boards, why do you think that is, and what value can ENC people bring to the board?
They're not looking beyond the title. I think that the title itself can be narrowly understood, and that's a disservice actually to the profession if it's just seen as like compliance. If you actually step back and think about the value that ENC professionals, CECOs, can bring to boards and their role actually in a company, it's much broader than just sort of regulatory compliance if they are the true CECO. And the skills that they need to be effective in their job are some of the same competencies and skills that are required and important for success in the boardroom, starting with good judgment, ability to collaborate and influence and build consensus, you know, courage to speak up and raise a different point of view rather than just sort of going along with the group, but doing that in a way that is diplomatic and doing that in a way where the voice and the position can be heard. And then really an overall understanding of, I'd say, strategy and governance and enterprise risk and culture. So I think the value they bring to the boards are the competencies that most boards are looking for anyway, and that what boards need to do when they're looking for board members is to look for competencies more rather than titles.
So how can ENC people better position themselves for board seats? Do you have interest in corporate board? Have you ever served on one? And what was your experience to either get a seat or try?
Sure. I think to better position themselves, it would behoove CECOs to get broad governance and risk management experiences under their belt. Make sure they're forming personal relationships with the board members that they should be interacting with at their companies and the other senior executives at their companies, because many of the senior executives will oftentimes be on other boards and their own board members will oftentimes be on other boards. So positioning themselves as strategic enterprise leaders and getting those experiences and then forming those relationships will help. I do have an interest in serving on corporate boards, and I'm looking into that at the moment in a number of different opportunities. So I've served on a number of nonprofit boards, but have not yet served on a for-profit board.
Before joining the University of Arkansas, we mentioned you worked as the Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at Walmart. What was that experience like? How long did you have that role? What did you learn from it? And how did it make you a better ENC professional?
It was an incredible experience. I learned so many things, and it's almost difficult to say where did that role start and stop. I would say I was engaged in the ethics and compliance profession for most of the 20 years that I was there before we officially kind of set up the separate ethics and compliance departments. It was really being managed out of the legal department. And so I had involvement in it there, as well as the broad kind of governance role that I had and serving as the governance attorney to the board and the secretary to the audit committee and those kinds of things. But what I learned from it is so many lessons. I mean, too many to go into in a short podcast, but how to build a program, how to build a global team with boots on the ground around the world, how to lead when you're leading a global team, how to extend a corporate culture around the world, not just at headquarters, how to capture hearts and minds, because if you just capture their mind and miss their heart, you're going to miss the hardest part, which is the culture part. How to build compliance into the business operations, how to use technology so that our program was transparent to the frontline operators. It was great. It was a view as well as what a small program can look like, because ours started quite small, just at headquarters, and then to what a big program should look like. And I have a much greater appreciation now of what the various stages of maturity of a program should look like, having lived through the different stages of maturity for a program.
I want to thank you so much for taking time today to be with us. We really enjoyed it, and best of luck going forward.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.